We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
You think football is still fun?
Yes.
Sir?
Yes, no.
No?
Sir, it was fun.
Not anymore, though, is it? Is it?
No, not right now.
No, it's not fun anymore, not even a little bit.
Just look at that, he hit the four. Guy gets a free steak. You having fun yet?
Oh, yeah, I'm having a blast, thanks.
Good.
All right, welcome back to Big Screen Sports, the podcast where all movies are sports movies. I am your host, Kyle Bandujo. In today's episode, the 1st of April is for a special kind of theme month. We are doing All Sports April, where we actually talk about sports movies on this podcast, which will be a welcome change for a month. But today's episode, we're doing a movie that was voted on by our Big Screen Sports Patreon group. This is one that has been nominated a bunch, has been up for getting covered, hasn't gotten the votes, and this month was its time, which is fitting for March Madness. But we are talking about Glory Road. Me and Danny Weiser from the Rank Kings podcast, returning to the show to walk out this one with me. It's got some highs, it's got some lows. Interesting episode with Danny, but I do want to shout out that Big Screen Sports Patreon group, which is the engine that makes the show go, especially our Big Chill producer level patrons. It includes Aaron Figueroa, Mike Schubert, Steve Rogers, Kevin Frost, Mike D, Ryan Eager, Mike Juice, Chris Mikoski, John Craig, Sam Smith, Zach Rich, Class Name Fire, Jason Alves, Stephen DeBoe, Dan McFall, Kevin Inkelman, Mac Lindsay, Kurt Ritchie, Robert Dove, Andrew Teagle, Benjamin Bauman, Jeff Esses, Anthony Scafone, Taylor Logan, Sean Hoffman, and Hamilton B. Ergler. Big thanks to them and all of our patrons for supporting the show, for voting on movies for the show to cover. There's two polls up now, or there's a poll up now for some theme months. We're going to do a couple theme months for the rest of the year. So patrons are picking those. And as always, they are what makes the show go. They voted in Glory Road today. So that's what me and Danny are talking about. It's me, Danny Weiser from the Rank Kings, talking about Glory Road. All right, returning to Big Screen Sports, he is the co-host of the Rank Kings podcast, my guy Danny Weiser. Danny, welcome back to Big Screen Sports. How are you doing tonight?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm hanging in there. Certainly hanging in there. It is the first episode of what is unofficially kind of All Sports April. We're actually doing all sports movies this month.
Wow. It's literally what this podcast is, and now it's been reduced to a theme month. What happened?
Getting weird. Because while all movies are sports movies, There are actual sports movies. That's what we're doing. But what are you guys up to on the rankings?
We're kind of overloading recording the next couple months because Ty leaves for camp. And so we're doing a lot of Patreon stuff. For the patrons specifically,
I want to clarify that Ty works at a camp and you are not like podcasting.
Oh, yeah. High schooler. Oh, yeah. Sorry. Ty works at a summer camp. And so he's gone for like 3 months out of the year. On the Patreon, we just did a Catch Me If You Can episode. They made me watch Citizen Kane a couple weeks ago, and that was an experience that I've not been looking forward to. We're doing a Twister episode this month, or this summer, I mean, to get ready for Twisters. On the main feed, it's just kind of business as usual. We're ranking stuff. Last week was our Roman Empire, stuff that we think about a whole lot. This week, we're doing music videos, stuff like that. We're just hanging out ranking stuff, you know what I mean?
Just the best podcast idea ever. I hate every day that I didn't think of it myself, but it is a wonderful show.
It originally was called Mighty Morphin Power Rankers, so you can just have that idea if you want.
Damn, that's actually real good. I like that a lot. Although you would have definitely gotten thrown in as like, oh, this is a Power Rangers podcast.
Yeah, that was part of it, but I just couldn't get like the logo out of my head. I was like, "The light? Are you kidding me? The lightning bolt would be so sick."
The lightning bolt. It's a good one. It's a good one. Who owns that now?
Who knows? Probably Disney, I assume.
Yeah, someone definitely willing to sue you.
Disney or That's Amazon for sure. are kind of the safe bets. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Danny, today you're joining me for an episode that was voted and has been nominated a bunch. Was voted in by our patrons, but really just in time. For we got March Madness going on right now,
right?
And this is one of the few college basketball movies today. We're talking about Glory Road, the 2006 basketball drama. In 1966, Texas Western coach Don Haskin led the first all black starting lineup for a college basketball team to the NCAA national championship. Starred Josh Lucas, Derek Luke, and Austin Nichols. Directed by Derek Gartner, the only movie he's ever directed. Mm-hmm. Got a 55% on Rotten Tomatoes. Before we dive completely in, Danny, do you prefer sports movies based off fictional events or sports movies based off real events?
Fictional events, usually. The ones based on real events kind of always end up following the same pattern, it seems like,
yeah.
Because they want to be fairly true to the original, but also add stuff to make it more interesting, because most of the time real life events are not formatted to be made into movies, or they sugarcoat stuff that might be too out of bounds, so they all kind of end up following the same. This movie very much is incredibly guilty of that.
Yeah,
by the way.
Yeah. The thing with real events, when it's done really well, it's great. I think Miracle is the best best version of a movie like this, where it's just like real event, underdog team, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. You know, this will obviously, I feel like we're going to bring up Remember the Titans like 10 times over this pod, because it's clear like that was the formula for this Disney movie produced by Jerry Bruckheimer, underdog story, civil rights story, that whole thing. And that's done well. And then there's like your Moneyball, where it's, you know, not about a team, you know, a team in the same way per se.
Yeah.
But when it's done really well, it works. This one has things where... It has moments where it's good, has moments where it's great, has a lot of stuff where it falls into some of the problems that some of these real life stories have, where they're just like, we're going to get heavy handed.
Yeah.
I think not to get like, not to get too down the rabbit hole of things, but I think this movie is very clouded and probably would be done differently if it was helmed by a guy who made more than one movie and wasn't written by two white people who had, who don't have many writing credits.
Yeah.
And I think if this is remade today, because this is an awesome story, and they did a lot of things right. And I think if you give this movie a little more edge, I feel like this is the same thing I said during the 42 pod, but if Spike Lee directs this movie, it rips out of the gym.
Yeah, it's such a bummer that this movie is so aggressively fine, because it is such a cool story and does deserve to have a really good movie. So yeah, if it were made today, there are really only two options. You either give it a cool director and a good writer, and we get like a really like gritty, detailed account of what happened and what these kids actually went through, or it's an AI-generated script that is exactly what we got in 2006. Because I know it wasn't, obviously, because it came out in 2006, but it does feel like a quintessential, hey, we fed 12 based on true events sports movies into an AI whatever, and also we fed this story into it and said make a movie out of it, and this is the script we got. It's so generic in so many ways, which is a bummer.
Yeah, 100%. We'll get into that. But there are some parts where this movie really needs to shine with the screenplay that it doesn't hit. But there are parts where it does hit. Is this a Hall of Fame, All-Star, starter, or bench warmer for you?
It's a starter. I don't think it's bad. There's nothing about it that like makes me inherently angry that I would call it a bench warmer movie. But there's also nothing about it that like I don't think it excels at really kind of anything. Like, it's just fairly middle of the road from start to finish. It's fine. I think starter's fair.
Yeah, if it was on, I would turn it on mainly for the basketball scenes. I think the biggest problem is on the court, it's pretty good. They got a lot of athletes.
Agreed.
They got a lot of guys who actually play basketball. That stuff is fun. They the games are compelling. I think the problem, again, when you contrast it with Remember the Titans, is Remember the Titans had a, if you're doing like the Disney movie, civil rights movie, sports movie thing, mm-hmm. Remember the Titans had a lot more depth, had a lot more, gave us really a lot more on the characters, their motivations, things like that. This movie felt a little rushed and surface level, but the things that did well, like the basketball and stuff like that, it's, there have been basketball movies that, that shat the bed a lot worse. So, it has its moments. The IMDb trivia is not the richest text. There are a few interesting nuggets.
It's wild that it's not a very rich text either, because it's such a cool story.
That's the thing. As soon as I finished my rewatch today, I was like, I need to do more research on this.
Yeah.
I need to like just look into the story in general. I maybe need to read the book, because I think there's probably a lot more here, frankly, that we didn't get. But Josh Lucas gained 43 pounds to play Coach Don Haskins, which is interesting because he doesn't.
Not a big dude.
Yeah. It's like, what did he weigh before? You know, he still looks fairly fit. Like he's got a little, you know, a little like he's not like firm, but he, you know, I was just kind of curious.
Also, did he have to, like, is anybody watching this movie is like, Don Haskins was heavier than this guy.
Yeah. That doesn't look like Don Haskins. I mean, I guess it was 20 years ago. Like Don Haskins makes a cameo in the film, was still like relevant, had been inducted into the Hall of Fame, less than a decade prior. So maybe he had a little more image recognition for Don Haskins at that point.
Yeah.
Two interesting casting ones. Originally set to play Don Haskins, Ben Affleck.
Okay. That's interesting. Cause he did the way back later. Mm-hmm. So he got to do his basketball movie, which is another.
You
got to
think this is a different Ben Affleck than right now, though, because this is a guy who's coming off Geely and Payback or Paycheck or whatever that one was. Mm-hmm. You know, this is pre The Town, pre Argo, like pre that Affleck comeback in Hollywood. This is a different guy.
Yeah. Do you think he would have tried a Texas accent?
Yes. I do.
How do you think it would have gone?
I don't know. I think I will say one of the things that works really well about this movie, I think Josh Lucas does the best with what he's given.
I agree.
In terms of this screenplay, I think he comes off as believable. He's Josh Lucas is really interesting. A basketball coach is a good character for him to play because he has played unlikable scumbag and he has also played really likable guy. And he's also the guy who in our Home Depot commercials tells us it's time, you know, for spring savings at the Home Depot.
Whoa, is that so him? He's,
yeah, that's him. Yeah. Dude,
no idea.
I can't even, we're going to do a little bit of research right now. How much does he make off Home Depot?
I had no idea.
How much does Josh Lucas, by Google auto-corrected. from the voice Home Depot ads, his net worth is about 16 million.
Cripes.
I think that's gotta be like total though. I don't think Home Depot is paying him $16 million, but I think he's probably doing very well.
What else has he been in?
So, if you remember, he's in Ford versus Ferrari.
Okay.
He's Leo Beebe, the unlikable Ford exec. A lot of character work, a lot of smaller movies. He's in Sweet Home Alabama.
That's the rom-com. Okay. That's where my brain went. My brain went to Sweet Home Alabama.
Yeah. No. Did the rom-com thing. He's a minor character. He's a character in The Lincoln Lawyer. He's a prosecutor. The Lincoln Lawyer kind of rips.
I haven't seen it.
You would like it. You would like it. Okay. I've watched that movie, I think like 5 times. Every time on TV, watch it with commercials. Every time,
okay,
on okay. FX. But no, I'm a big Lincoln Lawyer fan. But Disney was sued by Texas A&M University Commerce, so A&M Commerce,
for their
inaccurate portrayal of the school in the film. The university at the time of the film was East Texas State University, which, if you remember, is the school that just went full racism when they played Texas Western in this movie. It was later settled out of court. I do not blame A&M Commerce for suing Disney for this one.
Yeah, but also if they don't sue Disney, is literally anybody in the world making the connection that's like, hey, that's A&M Commerce now?
I don't know. The thing is, if they don't sue Disney and one person makes the connection, it's like A&M Commerce was cool with this.
That's fair. That's
they were cool point. With it. So, I think I think at that point you got to sue him. You got to lay down the legal law.
I'm pretty sure a third of my graduating class went to A&M Commerce.
You know what? Sometimes, you know, we, hey, Division 2 is important. Okay.
Yeah,
I went,
sure.
Yeah. Love. I think they're still Division 2.
Probably, if not smaller.
Yeah. I don't think they have a baseball team, but that's probably crazy. Research for another day. Danny, what worked about this movie? Cause it's not, you know, it's not without good points, but what for you is where this movie had some success?
You mentioned it. The basketball looks good, which is always you get kind of a stickler about that, about sports
yes.
movies, because it's pretty easy to phone that stuff in. It's
kind of the reason
clear.
I started this podcast, honestly, is when movies make big mistakes with the sports, and especially with the casting and not having athletes in there.
It's pretty clear that they prioritized basketball ability over acting, especially when you
yes.
look at the performances in this movie. Also because like half of this cast had never acted before and did not act again. So it's like pretty clear what the priorities were, which is probably, I was thinking about it when you were talking about one of the reasons that Remember the Titans is better, because it's a lot easier to hide lack of football ability in a football movie because they're wearing pads. You can do stunt doubles
yeah.
easily.
Yeah, you can't have helmets on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, can't really do that here in these movies, especially with the main actors, because you're like, there's not that many players on the court at one time, and like they don't have any equipment, so they had to prioritize getting people that like looked like they could play basketball, and it worked. I actually thought all of the basketball, granted it's 60s basketball, so it's like half the version of what today's basketball is. So
exactly
hard,
there's but. That like sliding scale I've never named, that's like the older a movie is portraying, the less good the sports have to look.
Yeah, it's why John Cusack looked like a believable baseball player in 8 Men Out. You know what I mean?
Yes,
baseball was not hard back then.
Yeah, but they cast this team with at least the black players are a lot of like ex pros, ex college players, things like that. You had Derek Luke as your lead guy, who Derek Luke has some definite athleticism. He's fresh off playing Booby Miles at this point. You get all your extras and all that stuff. Like that's done really well, and that's important. If they would have screwed that up, this movie's probably unsavable. If it's
Agreed.
Like, oh, it's bad, it's got bad basketball. But I think by the 2000s, you kind of got to a point where it's like you had to get that stuff right. Like Coach Carter came out around this time, and the basketball in Coach Carter looks awesome.
Yeah.
And it might even be a little less realistic, because in Coach Carter, there's a million dunks. Just all there's alley-ooping their faces off. We talked about Josh Lucas. His being able to switch between like likable guy but also unlikable prick is very useful for a character like this. Like
right.
he is not squeaky clean. You know, he's designed to rub you raw in a couple places, but again, for what he's given, it's a strong performance. You know, like I almost felt bad for him making that speech before the national championship game in the stands, because it's just so heavy-handed and so poorly written. I can't imagine it's what the actual Don Haskins said. Anyway, yeah, I think Josh Lucas is a strong lead for this movie. Like, he did this role. The accent's believable. That's important. That's something I'll snuff out easily. And Josh Lucas does that very well. He's put on the Southern accent for multiple films, so he's clearly got something that's tried and true. Probably his accent is probably better than Affleck's would have been.
Oh, big time. Yeah. Affleck would have sounded like he's from Boston, but also coaching Fort Worth High School girls basketball.
God, that would have been fucking incredible content.
Kind of great, actually, now that I think about it.
Incredible, incredible content.
Yeah.
You know something else that worked? Mm-hmm. This doesn't really have to do with the movie, but Adolph Rupp being the last notable Adolph.
Yeah. Because
that is it. Adolph Rupp was obviously born pre-war, and that name saw a steep decline in popularity.
Glad that name
World
died
War
down.
II. That was, I mean, dude, imagine being like an Adolph in 1950. Just impossible.
No,
that man took the name Adolph and was able to become one of the winningest basketball coaches of all time.
Yeah. I was about to say, imagine being named Adolph in the 1950s, unless you're Adolph Rupp, who's probably actually sort of cool with it. Like,
yeah.
Probably didn't actually bother him that much.
Well, the thing is, I mean, pre-war, Adolph was a name. It was popular. Yeah. There were multiple bunches of Adolphs, you know, especially your German descent. you know, you name your kid or German or Austrian descent, you name your kid Adolf, and then, you know, one bad apple ruins it for the rest of you Adolfs.
Maybe just go by a middle name, huh?
Yeah, it's time to like go by Clark or something like that.
Yeah.
What else worked for you?
The soundtrack is fun, which yes. That's kind of par for the course for Disney movies. They have the budget mm-hmm. or whatever the legal rights are to basically whatever music they want. So the music is good. It's just kind of like hits of the 60s plus, hey, let's have Alicia Keys, one of the greatest artists in the world, record a song for this movie. So soundtrack's great throughout.
Soundtrack bangs. Soundtrack absolutely bangs. Again, another comparison with Remember the Titans. Soundtrack also bangs. They really tried to go for that formula in just a lot of ways. There are a lot of similarities. The soundtrack is one of them. You know, the coach kind of being, we can all, you know, we're all in this together because coach is being so hard on us. I will say something that always works in a sports movie, like what always works is a tough coach drilling the fundamentals and like running guys to death in practice. That always works.
Mm-hmm.
Which I love. I love seeing those dudes just covered in sweat, which is a weird, you know, weird phrase.
You got the iconic like, running suicides, running up and down the bleachers. Name me a single sports movie or TV show that's come out in the last 40 years where you haven't gotten a, we're going to run until we puke up and down the bleachers scene. Every time.
Yeah. It's, so that stuff works. I also, this might be stepping on favorite scene, but I think the part of this movie I like the most is when he's having the conversation with the kid about his grades. And he's like, you know, what else can I do? And
I have that written down.
Is one of, legitimately might be one of my favorite moments in sports movie history.
Yeah, his mom waddling down that hallway, just duck footed down that hallway, clomp, clomp, clomp. And the look of terror on his face when he sees her, it's genuinely very good. I think it's my favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, it's incredible.
My son Harry,
no notes.
So good.
No notes.
Yeah.
I think the last thing that really like resonates for me is like, this is a good story. This is a cool story. This is a story with, you know, with great bones. It's clear why this was made. Again, we'll get into kind of some things that didn't work, but in terms of like this, the story is important enough and good enough and enough of an underdog story or enough of an important story that it carries the movie throughout its faults. Like that part I think keeps you entertained.
Yeah.
Despite anything that might not be working for you at the time, you're invested enough in the actual story, the actual event that happened.
Yeah. It's questionable in a lot of sports movies. Like, do we really need this story? You know what I mean? But this very clearly is a story that deserves a really quality, big budget effort put into it movie. It got some of that. I'm glad it got the national stage. I'm glad it was shown in every high school in America for 3 or 4 years. It seemed to be like one of the four DVDs that everybody's high school owned. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was like this and Radio and Finding Nemo.
Yes.
So I'm glad it got that. So at least like
the story. And October Sky with Jake Gyllenhaal.
Yeah. My entire grade in eighth grade got shown October Sky in the gym because there was something wrong with the classrooms. It was a weird day.
October Sky bangs. That movie is good. That movie is good.
Good movie. Eighth grade me did not care. But
yeah,
adult me, good movie.
We actually kind of watched that recently. It's pretty good.
It's
still
not bad.
Still pretty good. Yeah.
Jake Gyllenhaal.
Laura Dern working for me in that movie. Okay. Let's get into what didn't work about this movie. What's like the clear thing, like the strikeout of this one?
It's just a very, in every sense of the word, a paint by numbers sports movie. Like a team doesn't have the resources the bigger teams have. They have players the other teams don't want. Player gets cut, uses it as a wake up call. Coach is a hard ass. Team rebels. Team hates each other. Team comes together. They win. It's all very generic. You've seen this movie 400 times. It really does feel like they fed a bunch of existing pretty good sports movies into an AI and said, hey, write a script, which is sad because it's like a really great story, and I wish it had, I wish it was more unique or gritty or something, but it's all just, it's so deeply fine, which sucks.
Yeah. So piggybacking on that, it is that it doesn't take interest beyond the surface level.
Right.
It feels very rushed. It's like, hey, he's taking this job. Oh, we don't have a lot of money to recruit. We talked to one white player. He said no. So, you know, we don't really get into like how the community's feeling. Remember, the Titans does a very good job of that, of taking us outside of the football field and what's going on in the classrooms, what's going on with Gary and his girlfriend, people's parents, Coach Boone's house getting the brick thrown through it or whatever.
Right.
There's a lot more dynamics of what's going on and acknowledging the situation instead of like, yeah, this is unique. And this is, you know, he's recruiting these black players. And like at first, you know, they're not getting cheered for, but then everything's pretty fine until the two racist incidents. And then they're suddenly mad at each other, but they get over it after a game.
Yeah.
And it's not really interested in that much off the basketball court. It speeds through it too much. It's weird that it's 2 hours long.
Yeah.
But it seems like you could sub out some of the basketball. Give me a little more dynamics of the team and the town and living in El Paso. We see them go to Mexico. We don't really see a lot, you know, that much else. The announcer's narration works to run through a lot of this. When that's done really well, I enjoy it. This isn't my favorite. But it just, it needs more depth, more intricacy from its characters. The only things we really get are surface level things. Shed isn't tough enough. Kadra has this heart condition, things like that. We don't even, Latin has this cool story of where he went to Middle Tennessee State, left, didn't think the basketball competition was up to snuff, left, went back to Houston, and then was this kind of prize get. But we don't get anything about, him, how he got him or him getting him there or anything. The problem is we don't really know a lot about these guys, honestly. We've got Derek Luke dating Ashley Banks from Fresh Prince, but like that, we're not really that invested in that. It's just very he met the girl.
About it.
Yeah, that's where it's just like this one needs more depth. You could sub out some basketball stuff. You could, I usually like when movies get right to it, but like, let me know a little bit more about this guy. We see him coach one women's basketball game. It's like he's taking the job at UTEP or Texas Western, and now they're living in the dorms, and now he's got to go recruit. Like, there's just very little exposition, which is it's really interesting. Just jumps right into it.
Yeah, I mean, as far as how the community feels, we got like a few sideways glances from students, but not really that much. And then one booster who has a meeting with like the, I don't know if it's the AD or the dean or whatever, and who's like, hey, I don't know how I feel about this. And that was kind of it. Like, that was pretty much it as far as how like the Texas Western community specifically. Like, you're telling me in El Paso, Texas, a team that has seven black players on it, that's kind of all of the community. Obviously, they got a lot on the road. Like, they got a whole lot of it on the road from away fans and when they're traveling and stuff. But, like, from Texas Western in El Paso, all the students are cool with it, and you just got a booster who isn't even, like, that against it. He's just kind of like, I don't know how much I like this. And that was it?
Yeah, the only interactions we see amongst the students are that one lunchtime where they're all playing like that rigged basketball game.
Jerry Armstrong,
Eagleville, Missouri, All-State, 19 boards a game,
starting forward.
Don't mind, Pat. That's it, Jerry.
Harry Flournoy, Gary, Indiana. United Steel Mill day shift. The starting forward.
Yeah.
And then the one class where they're just kind of laughing at Harry and his mom being there. There's not really much else there. That's the interesting point. The human element is the interesting part of this. You know, from the get-go, you know this underdog team is going to go somewhere.
Yeah.
It's more... It's just... the problem with sports movie, you have to give us a reason off the court, off the field, whatever, to care about these people. And beyond just being like, oh, you know, they're, you know, the first all black starting lineup. And, you know, these guys kind of, these fish out of water guys were not, you know, it all kind of sums up that when they win the championship, I found myself not really caring that much. Like, I knew it was coming. Yeah. Found myself just kind of like, yeah, that's great. That's great. Really happy for them. But you know, I didn't get the chills, not to step on a category, but it just wasn't there for me.
It felt like they wanted to give every player a little bit of shine instead of making it to where it's just a few players that get a lot and you really dive deep with them. Like, like, why do I need to know about this goofy guy with a military haircut from Missouri, that white dude? Like, I don't, the movie's not about him. I don't care about the, he's the third build in this movie.
The worst line of this movie, and shout out to that actor who is in Day After Tomorrow, which is a very important movie for me.
Yeah.
Something I have seen 500 times. Mm. But the second he and all the other white players find out about the, you know, that they're not playing in the national championship game, he just said, you know, I got one thing to say. And it's like, you know, you go out, you guys go out there and show them, you know, that like a brother can ball or whatever, like that.
Show them,
like,
how bad five brothers can, like, man, yeah. That's,
and it's
not...
like, man, also, like, you just found out you're not playing the national championship. And it's, I desperately want to, I now want to do the research, because I don't really believe for a second that he's, that Don Haskins ran out just those seven players solely to, like, to make a civil rights statement. I think he did it because he's like, these are my seven best players, and I'm right. I'm playing the basketball powerhouse, you know.
Yeah,
that was where it just got, the parts where it that's a big issue. It did not land any of the civil rights stuff, any of the black player struggle. It really just, like, the one thing when Shed gets jumped in the bathroom, and then the motel vandalizing, that has shock value. Like, it's horrifying. But in terms of, like, a lot of what they go through and their dialogue about it is just not, it's not great. Like, it lacks teeth.
If this had just been Bobby Joe Hill and Harry Flournoy's movie, and we focus on them and we dive deep on them, and then, like, everybody, like, David Latin's there and that's cool, and Willie Cager's there and that's cool, but, like, they don't get as much, but we really dive deep and make me care about these two guys, or, like, Bobby Joe Hill and David Latin, that's fine too, or whatever, you know what I mean? Pick two of them that are the most interesting, dive deep on those guys, make me care about those guys, make me celebrate with them. Instead, you took 2 hours to, like, I'm semi-aware of seven players instead of, I really care about two or three of them. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's what Remember the Titans does really well, is you've got Gary and Julius, that specific friendship. There's not really any sort of, It's more like, hey, we're all, like, kind of pals now.
Yeah.
You know, you've got, you know, what's going on with Petey, you've got Sunshine, and then you've got a bunch of guys that you know a little bit about, and that's fine, but you've got the people that you know, you deeply care about them.
You check in with the others, but this is Gary and Julius's movie. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Which is great. Just, I think that's how it should have been, because I care so deeply about those two, and that they're clearly the leaders of the team and how they interact with everybody else. And, like, we're checking in with Sunshine and we're checking in with Petey and all, like, that's great. But I care very deeply about Gary and Julius, so much so that I want the team to succeed. And when they win, I feel like I win. Like, give this movie that treatment.
That exactly. So Josh Lucas's character, so Hoskins being very critical of the showboating type ball that Derek Luke's character plays, and the flashy dribbling and the stuff like that, and being very into the fundamentals, which is, you know, that is a stereotype and a trope that still, you know, too flashy, all that, you know, all that stuff is very, like, coded language for playing too black.
Yeah.
But when they're getting their ass beat by Iowa, and Derek Luke is like, you know, let us play normally. And he's like, okay, you know, you guys go do that. Like, we're getting rid of, like, my fundamental basketball or whatever. It's just like, oh, you're just John Calipari. Like, you can just recruit. You actually can't coach that well. Like, this wasn't going to work with your tutelage. Like, just hold up, let him cook. That's pretty much the strategy for this team.
I agree, but also when you look at like the on the court stuff and what they actually did they do anything different except for like David Latin dunked a couple times? Other than that, it looked exactly the same as the basketball did before, plus some effort was kind of it. Like Bobby Joe Hill put in the extra effort to get a couple of steals.
He's allowed to dribble through his legs now. And that's
like, yeah, that's a couple times. But he doesn't even really do that. But he does like a spin and that's kind of it. Like what? Mm-hmm. It wasn't like this big monumental change in play style or anything.
Yeah. What else didn't work for you?
I don't know how things are rated. This movie's rated PG. The N-word is consistently dropped
that
throughout.
That blew my mind when I heard it. And I was like, man, this was played in schools. This was a Disney movie. Because the N-word is absent from Remember the Titans. It's not said.
Right. It's consistently said throughout the whole movie in this, it feels like.
If I was watching that with my kid, I would have had to pause it and had like a long conversation with him about what that word is. It would have opened up something I did not want to open up at that age.
I was a freshman in high school in 2006, like watching this on DVD in class, just like my biology teacher didn't feel like teaching that day. So we watched Gloria Road. It's wild that it's rated PG, consistently dropping the N word. Also, a guy's head is dunked in piss and he's beat to an inch of his life.
Jarring.
And this is PG. That's insane.
Yeah, and it kind of comes, that part comes out of nowhere. It's very jarring, like the shock factor, the bloody graffiti on the motel walls. Like, that's the thing. It plays things very, like I said, without a lot of depth, without a lot of teeth for a lot of it. And then it's like, oh, when we want to slam that racism button, we bring the shock value. We're going to give you the N-word. We're going to give you this horrific vandalizing and graffiti in the motel room, and then this, like, we're gonna give you a hate crime in the bathroom that is deeply unsettling. And it goes from 0 to 100 instead of keeping that tone throughout the movie. That's what things were like, which it seems like that's more of what things were like. Right. That tone needs to be kept throughout the whole movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I it's just like they tried to dumb everything else down to keep that PG rating for some reason. And I just, if they wanted to lean into it, I think this could have been a lot more interesting movie.
Yeah. I will say what doesn't work and missed opportunity, and this is something that Remember the Titans doesn't do well either, is Emily Deschanel plays the wife in this movie, coach's wife. Nothing to
doesn't
do.
Do anything.
That relationship is a fucking nothing burger. And I, like, again, that's a... getting the coach's wife relationship right is a lot of TVs and shows have tried to do that and failed significantly. Cause it's like, she serves as narration and kind of a sounding board for the coach. And there's not really any depth to the relationship, but this movie is frankly no different.
You know what does that relationship the best? And I'm so sorry. It seems like every time we talk, I bring this up. The Friday Night Lights TV show gets the coach's wife relationship. Like, it portrays it kind of incredibly.
And that is what I've heard. Again, my ultimate black hole. But that frankly, that's what came to mind.
Yeah.
Thinking of that. Blue Chips, even though they are not together in the movie, does that very well. Showcases a relationship. But, like, you know nothing about this couple, their hopes, their dreams, you know, why she's sticking with him through all this. She's just a vehicle for not a whole lot, which is a bummer.
You're telling me that Don Haskins comes home, talks to his wife and says, "Hey honey, we're moving to El Paso, Texas, and we're going to live in a boy's dorm room." And she's cool. Nothing.
Yeah, sure.
She says nothing about it.
Sure. Yeah. I wouldn't raise my kid in the boy's dorms.
It's insane. Yeah, let's take our two small children and let's live in the boys' dorm room. That's nuts.
That is pretty bonkers, I will say. pretty bonkers.
Other than that, it's just her smiling in the stands, and then she gets that like one scene at the dinner where like Adolf Rupp's wife turns out to not be the worst person in the world, and that's kind of like they get sent a nasty letter that she doesn't really even do that much about. She just hands it to him and sits there in the bed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's really a bummer.
I think a lot of like the tough coaching stuff, aside from like being anti-showboaty play, like that, you know, demanding toughness and a lot of that stuff works. when he says he walks into Shed's dorm room, and I understand the 60s are a different time, like coaches can talk to players a different way, but it's like, I'm cutting you, you're going home, I'm packing up all your stuff. That's not just I'm kicking you off the team. I'm kicking you out of school. You don't belong here anymore. You're in the middle of a semester. If Shed sits there and decides, I don't want to do this, are you just kicking him out of school? Like, he is on scholarship. What are you doing?
Yeah.
I was like, I could see him maybe kicking him off the team, but like, you're just like sending him home 2 days before the season. That's another thing where it's like, the basketball season doesn't start for a couple months after they get on campus. I think that's one of the glaring missing chunks of this, is like, they get right to campus and they're practicing. There's no sense of timeline, what time of the year it is. And like, yeah, you're doing practice, but like, they're adjusting to campus. That would have been one of the crucial things. If you would just give me a little more of what's going on before basketball season starts, I think you can get a lot more invested in basketball season, like once that takes off.
It also very much felt like the college basketball season started 2 weeks after the high school basketball season ended.
Yes. Yes, it did.
It's really weird whiplash there.
Let's get into best scene. I think we both mentioned what might be the best scene, which is Harry's mom being in class. Like, Harry knows.
Yeah.
My son Harry knows.
Who can tell me the field classification of phanerotic rocks?
My son, Harry, can.
Yes, ma'am. Granite, cyanite, and gabbro.
Can anybody tell me how they are formed?
Yes, ma'am. Harry can.
By slow cooling plutons?
And what is a pluton?
Harry.
It is a deep-seated igneous intrusion with no visible floor.
Very good, Harry.
A true nightmare if you're Harry. Probably one of the worst days of his life at that point.
And that is the scene, his reaction to his mom showing up and then how he acts like actually in the class with her is the reason that Macaud Brooks is the other, like, him and Josh Lucas are the only two actors in this that I think even did like a pretty good job. Everybody else is so over the top, awkward and cheesy, especially Derek Luke, which is a bummer because Derek Luke's really good at a lot of things. I think
he's incredible in Friday Night Lights.
Yeah. Like the best part of Friday Night Lights.
One of the greater sports movies, the scene with him and his uncle outside the stadium after he packs up his locker. One of the best acted sports movie scenes in history. It's incredible.
Agree, which is wild because he sucks in this. Like, he's not good. And it's not entirely his fault. He got a director that doesn't really direct and writers that don't really write. So I don't think it's entirely his fault. But Josh Lucas and Macaud Brooks, who plays Harry Flournoy, are the only two where I'm like, okay, I'm into this. So this is believable. But a lot of it for that is because I just like that Harry's mom showed up scene so much. The other, I don't even know if you can call it a scene, but just basically anytime they're playing basketball works.
Yeah. All the games are good.
On the court stuff is great. Off the court stuff is not so much.
Yeah.
Kind of as a general rule for this movie.
Yeah. If you could sub out one of the games, the thing is too, they lean so heavily on the announcer instead of just doing some sort of act. Like, if they were about to play Iowa, which I think was top ranked, or they're saying they're like a big game.
Yeah.
Like, have some lead up, like, hey, we're playing Iowa, like something like that. Just have, you know, or the A&M Commerce game, just East Texas, whatever. You know, have some lead up to that. That is not just, you know, the announcer saying, oh, hostile crowd here. And like, things like that.
They could have used that dorky little assistant coach for that, I think, because he also wasn't. I don't know why he's there. How did he get him to follow him from Fort Worth to UTEP for like a nothing assistant job at kind of a nothing college? Let him be the exposition.
Listen, they could have fleshed him out a lot more, and that's a great idea. But I'm just glad to see him in anything, because you know who that man is.
No,
that is Cheddar Bob from 8 Mile.
Oh my god, it is Cheddar Bob.
It's Cheddar Bob.
Holy shit, he's such a little dweeb in this.
I know.
Well,
man,
awesome.
he hasn't worked in a couple years. What's going on? He was in Den of Thieves. And then he was in a TV show in 2020. Man, I need to check in on my guy. He was also in the Pacific.
I think he shows up at auditions and the casting director's like, holy shit, Cheddar Bob. And he just like turns around and looks sad and leaves. I assume that's kind of what happens with him now in his career.
I misspoke. He was not in The Pacific. He was in Jarhead with Jake
Gyllenhaal. Oh, okay. Yeah.
Jarhead kind of sucks, but I've seen it a few times.
No, I'm with you. It kind of sucks, but it's like, it's interesting enough to keep my attention.
Yeah. So, I honestly, the games are good. The Kansas game's good. The national championship game is pretty good. But it doesn't have like the gravitas that you would want. But the best scene, the mom in the class, is fantastic. Her showing up is excellent. Awesome very stuff.
Good. Very good.
Best quote.
There's not, it feels like all of the quotes that like they were trying to make really meaningful or so, like the show them how bad Five Brothers can be. It's clearly trying. Oh, it's terrible. We want this to be memorable and a big impactful moment, but it's so cheesy. And so actually my best quote is, if this is God's country, obviously the good Lord don't want no neighbors, because it encapsulates West Texas kind of as a whole. Like, that, it's just nothing, dude. It's barren wasteland as far as the eye can see.
Spent 5 years of my life in West Texas. That is 100%. My favorite is when they all roll up to practice after going out in Mexico the night before, and Hoskins says, "Como estás?" with the tone of a coach who has murder on his heart, because we have all had that. If you played sports at all, especially if you played sports in college and your college coaches know that you were out doing something you should not do, they're kind of mad, but they're thrilled because they get to kill you.
They get to make you run on the bleachers.
They get to absolutely kill you. College coaches who found out their players were out carousing are James Bond. They have a license to kill.
Coaches fucking love making their players run the bleachers, dude. There's nothing like it.
Nothing more. The thing that college coaches really love, because like, if your players actually, like, we had, when I was in school, we had multiple instances of one of two things happening. One, he find like someone gets in like trouble for drinking on campus or something like that, but it's nothing serious. Or just finds out that like we had a party the night before or something like that. Or like, there was one time we all went out to a bar and there was a junior college in town and their coaches were at this bar and basically pegged us, like let our coach know where we were and what we were doing and that there were a lot of underage guys there. That was a problem. Mm-hmm. Then there's when guys actually get arrested, and that's when coaches are like, they're just straight up mad and heads are going to roll. But the time when it's just like, didn't actually get into trouble, you were just doing something you shouldn't have been doing, that's what coaches love. Because it's, they're like,
sweet spot, baby.
It's like, you know, listen, it's fine. It's not going to affect him at all that you went out, but it's something that he can run you for. And brother, you guys are going to fucking have a terrible day. Congratulations. Yeah. And that is Josh, the delivery of Como Estas. I felt that in my soul. I was like, oh, I can't imagine showing up to that practice.
Similar moment when coach sees Bobby Joe Hill and his girlfriend on the roof, like when he crosses his arms and just stands there and waits for him to turn around.
That was another weird thing. Like, what are you cares, doing dating?
Who cares? He's like, he's dancing. It's just him, and he's dancing on the roof with his girlfriend. Why are you going to make him run the bleachers till he pukes? What does it matter, dude?
Yeah, that's deeply weird. Most athletic moment is very difficult, as this movie is full of incredibly athletic. Like, name one dunk, name one steal behind the back dribble. Like, this is a very athletic movie.
I kind of just chose what I thought was the coolest play, like team play. And it's the full-length heave to touch pass to alley-oop without the ball or any feet hitting the ground against Kansas. It's a very cool play.
Very sick. Very sick. That's a good choice.
As soon as that goofy, goggled white dude, like, quarterback rears his arm back to throw it, I'm like, this is going to be good.
I was legitimately afraid. I was like, are they going to have him heave this ball directly in the hoop? I should have had more faith, because this with the basketball, it did it right, but it looked at the time and I was like, what? Don't.
and I
was saved. I was saved. The Lenny Harris Pinch Hitter Award for Best Supporting Character.
Yeah, I mean, I literally just mentioned in my, like, I think it might be that tall white dude on the team with the goggles who's so chill about everything. I don't know that he has.
Is he the guy who gets picked up by the black girl at the party?
Yes.
That guy had the best night of his life that time. That's separate from the category, but.
Yeah, he's having a great time at that party. He's so chill about everything immediately. Is not the least bit bothered that his team has been. He just lost his spot to way more talented black people. Does not care. Is chill about it. Stoked to be winning. Also, the diner scene where Shed gets beat up in the that dude is ready to fucking fight. He's the first one out the door, ready to like let heads roll. He's gonna start throwing bows. And he's just down, and I love a character like that. I genuinely don't know if he says a word this whole movie. He might.
I don't know if he does. I don't know if he does either. I want to give shouts too to Rothmore, the team trainer and spiritual advisor, who has some good moments. He gives us the line that looks like knuckleheads come in all shapes, size, and colors when he
classic
catches them.
Classic old man line.
Classic old man shit. And then Tatiana Ali gets zero to do as the love interest for Derek Luke, but that is Ashley Banks from The Fresh Prince, and she's important. So
yeah.
And I will say, John Voight obviously took this job for a paycheck, but like he's John. Like that's the thing. Even when people take they're actors who will take paycheck jobs, like James Caan in The Program took a paycheck and was like, "You're getting my." It's like Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network or Mark Zuckerberg. You're getting like the least amount of my attention possible or something like that. That's what James Caan was doing in The Program.
Right.
John Voight said, "God damn it, if I'm showing up for work, I'm going to be John Voight." And he's actually pretty strong as Adolf Rupp.
I think John Voight just he relishes in playing assholes. He just loves playing a truly bad dude, and I think he was stoked about this.
Yeah, even though like I'm not sure Adolf Rupp was a bad dude, but I think John Voight probably just read the name Adolf and was like, bad dude.
Yeah.
Bad dude. Because I will say one of my favorite moments, actually, I should have mentioned this. One of my favorite scenes was in the national championship game. While that didn't totally work for me, was when there's the timeout when there's 2 minutes left and it's the opposing huddles. And it's the different speeches the coaches are giving. And they could have given Rupp some speech of like, you're better than them and they're, they should be holding a court with, holding candle with you. And instead he's talking about like his team. He's like, you guys are a great team. You had an incredible scene. Like you're going to win this game. Like go out and make me a profit. Like hell yeah, brother. And then Josh Lucas's speech as well. Like I really enjoyed that part.
Yeah. Yeah. Probably some of the best writing. I don't know a ton about Adolf Rupp except that famously refused to have black players on his team was kind of a thing. So that's mine skews to this is a bad dude, obviously. But also,
they give him credit at the end of the movie for recruiting Kentucky's first black player. And it's like he could have done that earlier.
Way earlier. It was like mid-70s, wasn't it?
Way earlier. I mean,
it was like 10 years after this game happened.
It's honestly, it's kind of the thing. It's like, this game probably had a ton to do with that. And again, like, I don't know the story, but like the classic thing is like Bear Bryant's Alabama team went and got its ass whipped by USC. And Bear Bryant was like, I got to get me some black players.
Yeah.
Because that's how that happens.
I do think this movie also probably sugarcoated some Adolf Rupp stuff, mostly because that man is a god at the University of Kentucky. And so if they like slandered him too much, then they're getting so much backlash specifically from this one community. So I think that's probably a lot of why he was like, okay, like we can hint at the fact that he's racist, but we shouldn't be over the top about it.
Yeah. Yeah. Let's take a quick ad break and then we'll get back.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Okay, we're back. This is a complicated category. Defend the villain. I think we should just skip it.
I will not.
The villain is the racist institutions of the United States that have dominated this country for the entirety of its founding.
Yeah, I'm just gonna like respectfully hard pass on this category as a whole.
Hard pass. Okay, the racists get no, Your Honor. My client deserves to go to jail.
Yeah, I'm gonna play the fifth.
That also reminds me of that. Have you seen that series of TikToks where it's the two dudes as lawyers? And it's like, Your Honor, my client is
simply
serving
standing
innocent.
On business. He's simply standing on business. It's all.
those guys rule. Yeah. Come on the pod, random lawyer guys. Okay, the Peter Gallagher Award for the hottest person in this movie.
Yeah, Harry Flournoy.
Good looking dude.
I think Macaulay Brooks is just a very handsome man. That's kind of all I got.
I think Derek Luke is considered like handsome. Derek Luke is just always in fucking awesome shape.
Yeah.
Like, and then I will say, like, I don't know this version, 43 pounds heavier, Josh Lucas. No, but like 2 years prior, he was in Sweet Home Alabama with like a scruffy beard. And yeah. I mean, Emily Deschanel and her sister Zoe, both
not a fan.
Really?
Not my thing, really.
Really? The Deschanels. Shots fired.
Wildly square faces, like almost unsettlingly square faces. That it's hard for me to look past. I'm so sorry.
That's fair.
Deschanel stands out.
We'll go with Macaulay Brooks, Harry Flournoy.
Good looking dude.
Best time, worst time. We have already mentioned the dude with the glass, specifically at that party.
Yeah,
that dude had his world rocked. Because one, nothing's better than being out in public and someone that you find attractive comes up to you and you have to do no work.
Yeah.
Which, like, I am not speaking from experience here. This man had experience that is alien to my life.
Yeah.
But that one, like, I mean, the best night of his life. Like, he probably... So, one of two things. He either married that girl and was, like, her slave forever because... Or her, you know, her devotee forever.
Right.
Or he... Went back to UTEP, found himself a nice random West Texas white girl and got married and all that stuff. But he thinks about that night
all the time. One party.
He's going to be at like the bowling alley in his 70s, smoking cigarettes, hanging out with his friends. He's like, guys, I got to tell you
an incredible story.
Oh, man. So he had a good time. I will say not many other, like, Don Haskins has a good time. I mean, he does what gets him started on a Hall of Fame career, but it seems like he's stressed all the time. Most everyone is just generally high strung and stressed. The black players for a lot of reasons. You know, the white guys become really, really, they're innovators or not innovators because they had no say in it, but they're really breaking through the glass ceiling of being the first in a very long line of white guys to ride the coattails of more talented black players to a national championship.
Yeah.
And
they started a really important tradition in college sports.
Exactly. They start a very strong tradition of, I'm just going to sit on this bench. I'm going to have this team gear and I'm going to lift a trophy, baby.
Revolutionary trailblazers, dude. I think also, I mean, I had Don Haskins because he apparently was the first guy to discover that all it takes to win college basketball games is just don't be racist.
Don't be
racist. If I'm not racist, I'll win a college basketball national championship. Like, he's having a great time.
Wait, are you telling me that if I'm not a piece of shit, a racist piece of shit, I can just win? I can have all these wins? Yeah, coach.
All it takes. I didn't even do that much coaching. I just had to say, yeah, sure, black guy, you could play on my team. And he got a national championship. He's having a great time.
Didn't have to pay the players or anything. Just had to say, you come here. I'll let you play on this. Hey, you're more talented than all my players. I'm going to be kind and let you join my team.
That's it. Not even really overly kind. Just like,
no, yeah, I'm actually
not actively a dickhead. Like, that's sort of it. Got a natty. Yeah.
Man, smart.
Great smart. Time.
Yeah. Adolph Rupp had a bad time in his whole Kentucky. I believe, if I remember correctly from reading Jeff Perlman's book, Showtime, about the Lakers, I believe that loss hung with Pat Riley for a while. So he didn't have a great time. But generally,
the obvious answer for worst time is every single person of color in this entire movie, but that's not very fun to talk about. It's the obvious, clear choice for worst time.
If we had to pick one, it's Neil Shedd, who, one is treated poorly, like he's having a tough time on the court, and then he is victim of it, just an absolutely heinous hate crime.
Yeah.
And multiple, really, because his room is also broken into. Right. So,
but that's the obvious one and not as fun to talk about. So my answer is Don Haskins' wife who had to raise two small children in a men's college dorm.
Do you think after the Natty, they were like, hey, we can pay you enough to get you a nice one-bedroom house in El Paso?
How expensive can a house in El Paso be, dude?
Stunning. Stunning.
Get that man out of the dorm. He's got toddlers.
I mean, just what a nightmare.
What about Don Haskins' kid, who the only times we see him are one, when he's getting popped in the nose with a basketball, and two, when he's walking through a men's college dorm room.
We also see him asleep. Probably. No, doesn't get a lot. We are going to skip the Keith Morrison Dateline episode on the pod.
Yikes.
In this movie. Yikes.
Yeah,
two,
holy shit.
I don't think either of us have that impression in the bag. That is a Caroline. That is all for Caroline. So we're going to go to roster moves. Who would you swap for Air Bud in this movie?
I think I do this every time I'm on. Just the idea of Air Bud playing like a sort of bad guy is very fun. I'm going with Adolph Rupp because I want a scene where like Air Bud is like in a suit and is on the bench and starts barking, and then the Black Players are like, what did he just call me? I want that real bad.
If you replaced Emily Deschanel's character, the wife, with Air Bud,
doesn't really
change.
No
she
changes.
She gets that little to do. If he's instead like coming home late and Air Bud's coming up to him like, yo, you're late, just like a dog would be, like, it's late. You've been gone. You know, you've been gone for 47 years. Where have you been? The movie is probably exactly the same, except now you have a dog.
Yeah, it's that and Air Bud like sitting in the stands at a basketball game, which would be a great time. I would love to go to a basketball game and be sitting next to a golden retriever. It'd be a great time.
Yeah. If you replace David Latin with Air Bud, it means Air Bud's in foul trouble, which is a really fun concept of like, God damn it, Air Bud, you fouled out of 10 games this year.
Yeah, I like that a lot. Also, Air Bud replaces that like 5'4 guy on the team who kind of just comes in and shoots jumpers sometimes, because then we get the cool actual Air Bud scenes of him shooting jumpers.
What if Air Bud is the guy, the big white goonish guy, and at the party, the girl's like, who's your friend? And she's like, she's just like, hey, Air Bud. She just starts like petting him.
Who's a good boy?
Which, like, if you've ever been to a party where there's a dog, you know who gets the most attention from girls?
Yeah.
The dog.
100%.
Which, if there are any college students listening to the show, which I imagine there are not, you might think you want to get a dog in college. I love my dog. You don't. Right. Most college students should not have a dog because you're gonna want to stay out. Guess what? That dog's gonna be home waiting for you. So you need to think. You college kids need to think long and hard about if you can kind of commit the kind of love and dedication you need to give that dog a good life in college. Don't just think about if you take this dog to a party, you're gonna be very popular.
Yeah, yeah, that's not great. Also, the same guys who like, ooh, if I take this dog on walks in the park, I'm getting a lot of attention from girls. Like, yeah, that's like an hour a week. What are you doing the rest of the time, my dude?
Yeah. Yeah. You're gone in class. You're wanting to go out. All your friends. Hey, guess what? If you're in a frat, your friends are going on a ski trip. Guess who's not going on a ski trip? You, because you can't afford to put your dog in the kennel. Mm-hmm. So lessons learned, folks. The Big Chill. Now, this one tries. I would say it tries. How many times do you think it tries? I would say it tries twice. Maybe three times.
They definitely try really hard with the show them how bad Five Brothers can be, I think. Yes, is a very big attempt.
That's the biggest face plant there.
Winning the national championship also is a very big attempt, I feel like.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, Cager's mom, maybe? Does that count?
I think Cager's mom. I also think when they beat Kansas on that, that, you know, he steps over the line. I did love the line where they ask him, you know, your controversial win against Kansas. And he's like, it wasn't controversial. He stepped on the line. They lost. We won. Like, we won him. Good answer. Solid.
It's like,
answer.
Oh shit. He really is a college basketball coach.
Yeah. Okay. Before More Restore, prequel, sequel, or remake?
Remake, because this movie was boring.
I would love to see this remake. I don't think they will, but
no.
This would be a very good movie to be rated. Honestly, even if you get the team that made Coach Carter and make this movie.
Yeah. Agree.
I think it'd be great. That's the thing. This movie's fine. There's a ton more in the bone. This is a really interesting story. I would love to see like a good documentary on this and not a, we as a society need to get away from the documentaries where it's just PR for the person. Like 30 for 30 used to be something great. And now it's fucking cheeks, but like get away from like the Johnny Manziel Untold thing. But more on this, like I would like to find out more on this. In fact, I wonder if we are missing some pop culture on this.
Give me Adam Sandler as Don Haskins and just make Hustle again. But
yes,
this story.
Man, Hustle was so good.
It's incredible.
Let's see if there's a documentary of this, just so we're not speaking out of our ass here, Danny.
Surely there's been more made of this. Or is the story just actually not as interesting as we think it is? Like, I haven't done a deep dive.
I feel like it is. So
this is based
on the book. Well, it's based on a biography of Don Haskins, based on Don Haskins, like Glory Road, My Story of the 1996 NCAA Basketball Championship and How One Team Triumphed Against the Odds and Changed America Forever. Mm-hmm. So, and it was timed to be released with the movie. You know, there's a 49-second clip on YouTube of Pat Riley remembers what it was like playing Texas Western in 1966, and he's looking like he's chilling in his Miami house. I bet that's a good 49 seconds of content.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking a lot while watching this movie. If instead of going from Don Haskins' point of view, if this was from like Bobby Joe Hill's point of view, I bet it's a better movie.
Oh, yeah. I think so, too. I think from the players, yeah. Although the thing with college sports and like coaches dominate, and in a sports movie, you need that central focal point. If you look at a lot of these, like Miracle, Remember the Titans, Coach Carter, you got to have that central figure. I will say CBS produced kind of a documentary of 1996 Texas Western Championship of Change. But yeah, I feel like there's certainly more to this. You know, I would be interested in reading Don Haskins' biography and just seeing how much of this lines up with how he was actually going about things.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I agree.
But Danny, that is what we've got. I appreciate you joining me for this one. I'm sure I'll be seeing you again very soon on the show. We gotta crank out a live watch at some point this month. But tell the folks where they can follow you and where they can check out the rankings.
Yeah, just follow our show at Rank Kings Pod. There's two K's there in the middle on Instagram, and we're posting some TikToks every now and then. Join our Discord. It's free. We've got a lot of discussion, not just about episodes, but just kind of about movies and about sports. We're going to do a lot of Olympics stuff, I think, whenever that gets started. So the Discord link is in our social media bio. So hang out with us in there.
Everyone go check that out. And if you enjoyed this episode, please remember to subscribe to Big Screen Sports, rate and review wherever you get your podcast. We will be back. We're doing all sports movies in April. Revolutionary concept. So, you know, tune in for that. We'll catch you back next Monday. Thanks for listening.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE system technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.